You're listening to Making Good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops. The folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
Cool. my name is Ella Campbell. I currently do the social media posts for the shop, and I met Renee, I met you 5+ years ago back on Aretha Casa Haley. I was going there because I was working at the jazz market a few blocks away, and I have since changed jobs, but still gone to Church Alley the whole time. The Nutella lattes, hint, really drew me in and kept me there and kept me coming back. And I live in Mid-City, so then when the shop moved to Mid-City, it was after I had changed jobs and wasn't on Aretha Castle Haley anymore. And I was like, wow, Church Alley really followed me.
Obviously.
So that I didn't have to stray very far. So that's kind of how our circles connected. And then I am a active musician and have been since I moved here 7 years ago. And started doing the social media because Renee asked me to. And
like, you're here every day.
I'm there every day. You know, I love the menu. I love the food. I love the coffee. I love the ingredients. And I like also that you participate actively in giving a platform, using the platforms that we have to address real issues going on in our city. I feel like we address things that are going on hyper locally, and that's actually a really good way to be able to directly make someone's day better, make someone's day easier, make being in this crazy city more friendly. So that's one of the things that I really treasure about being able to work in the brand with you.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate that you are one of our cheerleaders and has been for a long time.
Yes. Number one fan.
I remember I got a job in DC at the diner, and I just walked in, and I ended up getting a job on my first shift. I was just introducing myself to people, or people were coming up to me to introduce. And then I like introduced myself to this woman that's sitting at the bar who obviously worked there. And she was like, I'm just a customer. I don't work here. I just come here all the time. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I will see you every day as well. So that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of days where I didn't know what to do to get myself out of the house, get myself moving. And the first thing that I would do to get some momentum behind my day was I always knew I could go to Church Alley.
Yeah.
And hopefully other people feel that way too, getting their little days, whether how easy or difficult it is to get that day started. Yeah. On days where it was difficult for me to really get the ball rolling, there was this little habit that I could do, which was going to Church Alley will get me out the door, get my momentum started.
Yeah.
And it also on Aretha Castle Haley started as this space that was, we had this very open office environment. We didn't really have individual places to work when we were over at the jazz market. So it gave me this little space to go to where I could hyper focus in a little corner.
Mm-hmm.
In the shop on Aretha
Get some work done. It's interesting you say that, because that's what the shop has been for me too at times. I mean, I lost my mom, I went through a divorce, I lost other family members, and it was just something I had to go here every day, and then I had to clean up which, you know, and clean the same spots all the time and bake the same things all the time and have these amazing, interesting conversations with customers that came in. And that routine has been extremely helpful for me, you know, and has helped me create a meditation practice, has helped me be more present. That shop helps me be present all the time. And it still does, not even in rough times, but in good times too. Mm-hmm. And it's been, that's really interesting. That's exactly how I have felt as well. So, so we're doing, this is our last episode of the first season. And I wanted you to come on so we could, cause you know the business so well and me so well and everything. And so I just kind of wanted us to have, to end it on like a more intimate note of like the business itself. We've interviewed so many people. And that's been really fun to meet everyone or to have more conversations and learn more about the partners that we work with. But I wanted to share some of the insider parts of Church Alley as well on just our last episode. So you are going to be a little Miss Oprah as we move forward in the next few minutes.
An interviewing superstar. Well, speaking of peaks and valleys, this past year and a half or so, I'm sure has been full of them. And at least I've seen a lot of glimmers of people really pulling for each other, people really supporting one another in very direct ways. And I didn't know if there was anything that really comes to mind with that kind of intimate connection that you found while you were working at the shop, if it, you know, the community kind of having to become smaller and tighter, if that found its way into the shop.
Yeah. So when we first had to close in March, obviously it was really scary because we had no idea. Well, just physically scary because we didn't know what was happening, but also just financially scary because the shop had to be closed for so long and it just kept getting extended. And then we started doing these deliveries and people showed up, man, like those deliveries saved us because that was before any money could come out. That was before we had any idea what was happening. And I had talked to my landlord and Billy had been and is still being really gracious and allowed me to not pay rent through the summer last year. Yeah. And then reduce rent. Yeah. I didn't pay for a couple months and then we cut my rent in half for many months. And now I'm in a position to be able to pay rent and start paying him back for some of that rent that, And so, and he knew, he was just really helpful. I mean, and he just, you know, he's like, it doesn't make sense for me to try to charge you all this rent and you can't pay and then you leave because no one is doing business, you know? Mm-hmm. And we had been there for we've been there for 5 years now. And so I'm just really appreciative. And that kind of thing kept happening over and over again, from Billy helping us with the rent to people who were our regulars and people who I didn't know at all, really, or didn't know well, or had seen a few times, purchasing delivery. And, you know, we were doing just dozens and dozens and dozens. You know, it would take me 5 or 6 hours to deliver all the stuff that people were ordering and then making it. And, you know, and staff was coming in and making it and then delivering it. And that just really saved us. And it's interesting because some of those people are still buying the same things that we created in order to survive last summer. And we sustained those products and they're still purchasing those things now.
So what makes those products different than what you had already been doing?
So we've ended up bulking up all the products that we had. So all the cookie, when people come in, they buy a cookie and one cold brew. Well, now they were buying growlers and a dozen cookie dough. You know, we would size out the dough so they could just put them one at a time. And then that's what people were purchasing. And then I also just kind of called out, you know, it has always been important to me to sustain relationships or talk to other business owners. And so I often have big email chains going back and forth about issues that impact us, from flooding we've had, you know, or COVID, we started it again. So in COVID, I emailed like dozens of business owners, and we just talked through that whole first 6 or 7 months, we just had an email chain going of what we were doing and sharing ideas and trying to help people in different industries. And everyone, if you had a question, you would email the group, and then they would, other people would put ideas out, and, you know, and it really helped everyone. And it was just also, it didn't feel so isolating to make decisions like that. So that was happening at the same time. And then I was like, well, okay, why don't we just sell all of their products too? That could, you know? Yeah. So then we started adding all of those people's products to our website. And then a lot of those products have stayed and are now on the shelves. And then we've done dug in and did a bunch of more research of other small businesses along all within Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So we divided the state up into regions, and then we dug into each region and tried to find similar minded, really high quality products made, you know, in Louisiana. And so that's, and so as we have more shelving unit, as sales keep increasing as they have this year, we're just going to add more products. And yeah. And so, and it's been interesting. It's been fun to like find, to see what else, because Louisiana is so industrious. And so all these people are doing all these interesting things. And so it's been cool to like reach out to them.
And is building the shop in a retail way like that, with products that can be kept on the shelf, and I've seen a few new refrigerators. Yeah. Is that always been an idea that you had, or was that an idea born of necessity from this last year? Did it jumpstart it?
It's a little bit of both. So when we were over here in Central City, we had a big space of retail, and it was like greeting cards. We sold cookbooks. We sold pens, all kinds of different things. And because the business was so slow, the walk-in traffic was so slow, and we needed something else that had bigger profit margins. A cup of coffee is great and it's inexpensive, but the profit margin is pretty good, but you have to have really high volume in order to stay in business. And that wasn't possible in Central City. And it sometimes is difficult in mid-city because our corner floods all the time. And so we need some bigger profit ticket items in order to stay in business. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of because we're not in such a high foot traffic area. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of just the way it is. And so then we couldn't have people inside. Right. And so I had to use that space. I had to think about, like, you know, when you're mapping out your business for a restaurant, each table is worth a certain amount of money. And it's a little bit different. So like if a restaurant's open at night, you're going to get like 2 or 3 turnovers in a night, depending on how late you're open. And so that each table is worth a certain amount of money. And then that's how you can see if you have a business that's profitable, you know, that can make money, of how many seats you need, how much staff you need. And you kind of make each square foot is worth a certain amount of money. And so when we didn't have people in, I had to rethink what the square footage was worth, you know, like how am I going to make all the money I need to per square footage for that space in a new way. And so that retail space is like, okay, you know, let's be honest, like people still think of us as a coffee shop where they want, you know, they want to sit for 5 hours with 1 or 2 cups of coffee, and that's not sustainable for any business, you know? And I know that that's like a cultural thing of where you want to sit, and I want to do it too, but it really, it hurts small coffee shops and cafes when customers do that regularly.
Right. And so you're working in way smaller volumes of people in and out the door, because a lot of smaller businesses don't have things like apps and drive-throughs and things that huge chains can
sustain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so independent shops like mine can't really sustain having a ton of customers sit for multiple hours.
So I
also had to rethink that, you know, how was I going to kind of change our business model to more of a cafe option and limit the amount of hours that people spend there versus how much money they spend.
I wonder too if people's mentality has changed about that now that people have had to build their nests to work from home.
Yeah.
If that'll look different in the next year. I know we're doing like 2 steps forward, 1 step back a little bit with the new variants coming out, but if maybe people's mentality is that they're more comfortable getting work done at home now, or more comfortable, more enjoying the convenience of having things delivered.
Yeah.
And if that will kind of go hand in hand with the needs changing of the shop as well. Did having all of this new products, different mindset of the square footage of the shop, I know that it helped with cash flow at that time. Mm-hmm. Were you able to, with the assistance from your landlord, and I know you're a landlord too, so we'll get to that.
Everyone knows Billy.
And then you also have a tenant, so there's another layer there.
Yeah.
We're peeling the layers here. Did you find that with the assistance from your landlord at the shop, and then the different items and thinking about the square footage differently, were you able to sustain on cash flow, or did you, it sounds like you had kind of like a targeted research group?
Yeah,
with
we
your
did.
Email chain. Was there other resources that you relied on?
Yeah.
Or were you able to sustain with the cash flow from?
We did use cash flow. We also had an amazing few months of 2020 and a really great 2019. And so I had a lot of money. I had a good amount of savings for the shop already there. Wow. And so we were in the best position the shop had ever been at the beginning of the pandemic. And so that really helped us navigate some difficult conversations. And so we did sustain on cash flow for several months. And then I did apply to the PPP loan on the second round, and that was in August. So that was when they changed. I didn't at the first time because it was too restrictive for restaurants. We would have
remembered.
Yeah. They like, you had to hire back everyone back and use all the money, but it was the middle of summer. There was no way I could hire everyone back for the same hours and make any money at all. It would have closed. I couldn't have done it. And so so when they extended, so then you had like 23 weeks to use the money for payroll, and that helped. Yeah, because we weren't as busy. And so we weren't open 7 days a week anymore.
Right.
So, I needed to be able to use that money over a longer period of time. And so that really helped, and that was completely forgiven. And so now I went through Iberia Bank, from New Iberia, from my hometown. And I just got it forgiven. Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, so that was really helpful. And then we did do the second PPP loan later, just a few months ago, and they extended that even more. For restaurants specifically, because all of these programs were not beneficial to restaurants in particular.
And maybe this is too nitty gritty, but maybe not. Maybe people want to know, like I do. So did you have to... So you said you went through Iberia Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a program of Iberia Banks?
No, this is the Small Business Association. Okay. Yeah, the SBA. And they did the program, and then they lent the money to the banks. And then you applied with your bank. And so this is for anyone that owns a business or is looking to own a business, your relationship with your banker is crucial. And so I have built over a long period of time a good relationship with Iberia Bank, and my bankers have changed because some of them have left or retired, or I've needed different resources. So a long time ago, I was able to get a line of credit. That was a different banker. My loan that I paid off in March of 2020 completely. So I had no loan payments through COVID. So that was really just luck. You know, that was good timing. And really helped me be able to finance, to use cash flow better. And then, so that was a different banker. And then now my banker that I see all the time, who now I talk to, we have just really built a good relationship. And so it is just crucial that you go in and say hi and talk to people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then when I needed, and I ask him financial questions all the time. you know? And so whether it's for my home or for the mm-hmm. business. And so that allowed us to have a very open relationship. And then when I needed money, eventually he gave me the best advice that he could, you know, like he said, right. wait, don't take that first round of PPP. Wait, he's like, let's figure out your line of credit and use it a little bit better. You know, and he had me come in and we talked about,
it's important to have people that when you're like, I want to do this, who are brave enough to say, take a step back.
Yeah.
Those are very special people, I think, in yeah. our lives with relationships where the other person can feel comfortable, especially as a client, because mm-hmm. you always want business.
Yeah, exactly.
To say, no, let's think differently about that. I think it's really important to have people that you work with be comfortable saying no to you
yeah.
and being comfortable coming up with another idea and yeah. seeing if that will stick with you.
Yeah. I mean, it was key because I was using my line of credit incorrectly. And he said, you need to use it a different way to maximize this amount of money over of what we're experiencing right now. And I did, I completely changed how I used that money. And it saved me for the rest of the year. So because I was able to just move money around very strategically back and forth between a checking account and a line of credit account. And that helped me stay in business as well.
What are kind of like, if you had to, I don't know, can you explain some like microcosm example of what that means?
Yeah. So your line of credit it's technically called a revolving line of credit. And so that means you have access. It's like a credit card with very low interest rates, like extremely low interest rates. And you have like, let's say you get access to $50,000. And so you can pay either, you can write a check from your line of credit to pay for something, or you can move at the end of the day, your credit card company gives you money into your checking account. You can move that money into your line of credit to keep as much money available in your line of credit as possible. And you don't want to purchase like equipment through your line of credit. For a business, you want to purchase things that you pay off really well. So things that are included in your cost of sales, right? So not your fixed expenses, but your cost of goods expenses, your COGS. That's how you use your line of credit more effectively.
What's an example of a COG?
Salad.
Okay.
Tomatoes, cucumber. Mm-hmm. So our sandwiches, right? So like we make all of our income from our menu. And so all of our expenses, our rent, our electricity, our insurance, my payroll is all included in every menu item. Every avocado toast is helping pay for my flood insurance, yeah. you know? And so that is, so like I spent a lot
That's
of time
something
thinking
maybe through. People could stand to think about when yeah. they are receiving a lovely table service at a restaurant
yeah.
that part of everything that they get to enjoy is you're not just paying for an avocado.
Yeah.
You're
no.
paying for yeah. someone being able to give you a really fantastic experience.
Yes. Yeah. You're paying for customers' health insurance and rent
yeah.
and all of that stuff. Electricity. Yeah, it's all included in your menu items. And so that's why we have to sell a certain amount of menu items in order to stay in business. And it's pretty specific. I mean, that's any business, but it's very crucial for restaurants. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I just had another and I forgot it. Okay, I forgot.
Okay, moving right along.
Continue.
well, maybe we can use the space to kind of pivot to, so we talked about how you've benefited from a gracious landlord.
Yeah.
So what is it like being a so what is it like being a homeowner that has a tenant?
Yeah. I mean, it's been really nice. I mean, she's lived here. I have a double. And so she's lived here since the 90s.
Wow.
So she definitely knows way more about the house than I do. And so she has helped me a lot. And, you know, she's an older woman. So it was definitely, and she had just retired and she actually just had had a heart attack right before COVID started too. And so we were really nervous and we had good conversation. And my mortgage company forbearance my mortgage through the time. And so, I didn't charge I also, you know, extended the same grace that Billy did for me to my tenant, and I didn't charge rent for that time. And we made it work, you know, so she's still behind on rent, but she's, you know, it's fine. You know, she's paying me every week as much as she can. And then, cause we're all in a hard situation and that's just the reality, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not much you can do, you know, I'm not going to evict a 70-year-old woman who's lived here for 30 years. Like, you've got to be kidding me. Right. But I know that that is happening all over the city. Mm-hmm. And especially as this, I think the rent, the eviction
moratorium
is ending next week. And so they're expecting New Orleans to get hit pretty badly. Wow. From that. You know, and that stuff hurts everyone, you know, that is going to hurt my business too. You know, and so, this is what I was going to say. What has happened throughout COVID is that our supply chains have been extremely disrupted. And so we've had to, you know, kind of think through how we're going to get products and how we're going to sell things because of that. And so, you know, it impacted our rent, it impacted our supply chain, it impacted everything. And so we've just been constantly kind of, you know, I'm definitely at a point now of decision fatigue. Like, I'm extremely I'm not even overwhelmed. I think I'm just completely depleted on making decisions and like having to change things and that kind of stuff. And I can guarantee you that everyone that owns a business is kind of feeling that same thing right now, you know, and all of hospitality staff are kind of feeling that too, because we've kind of been at the front end of this the whole time. Sure. You know?
Yes. Being able to have something that was not my own cooking during this was such a huge treat.
Yeah.
And such a big kind of light to me too, because it was one of the few things that was happening beyond my four walls.
Yeah.
When all of us were kind of, I call it deep quarantine.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of gratitude for all of the folks that helped put something delicious on their tables during this time.
I mean, it was really, you know, we saw a difference because we closed completely for a while and did delivery only. And then we reopened with the door, just a table at the front door. And we did that for a long time. Once we did that, all of our spirits lifted in the shop. The staff, you know, we all felt so much better being able to see the people again that we saw almost every day. And we got some new customers, and it was very challenging in a lot of times to navigate new personalities that had much bigger expectations for us than we were able to deliver in that situation. But a lot of our regulars came and just like, you can see this, any restaurants are talking about this all the time, is that the people who were nice and supportive of us before COVID have been just bright lights in our life at this point, you know? Yeah. And then when we opened at the counter, it also lifted our spirits to be able to interact with folks all the time. And I feel like we were really lucky to have so much communication with people compared to people who had office jobs, who are working at home, you know, and didn't have as much new interaction with people. And then we've had an incredible amount of new customers who are just now meeting, because now they can sit inside and they can stay inside a little bit longer. And so now we're getting to meet like all these people who have been coming for the last year that we didn't have relationships with as much as we've had with older customers.
Is that the same kind of customer influx that you usually see in a year? Is it different? Do you have more new customers than you would have thought?
We definitely, no, I mean, it's hard. So we get a little like, we get a little survey from Square, you know, like, cause people use their same credit cards and it doesn't tell us who, but we get a percentage of people returning customers to new customers, and it has stayed about the same. And so, so I'm not sure, you know, We definitely, I guess we have new people because people have moved to Central City, to Mid-City. Mm-hmm. And then also a lot of people are moving away. A lot of people are leaving New Orleans right now. And so we have lost a lot of regular customers just because it's such a hard city to live in and survive in. And it was,
especially if we don't have the hospitality business in full.
Exactly. Everyone that I know that have left before this summer, but from last summer to early this summer, was hospitality staff.
Wow.
And they've just decided, a lot of people just decided they didn't want to work in this industry anymore and they want it to be closer to their family or whatever. So there's been a lot of people like that. And then a lot of new people who moved neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you notice any change in people's behavior as they're
We had a rough, when the CDC announced the mask mandate was that you no longer had to mask anywhere. We had some really bad situations in the shop and I had never seen that before. You know, obviously I've been in the industry for 2 decades now. I've seen really bad, I've dealt with really bad behavior before. And I worked graveyard for years and years. So, but this was interesting. We had never seen that in this shop before. And we have seen some just really poor behavior, really being disrespectful to staff. And that was really hard. Mm-hmm. And I think some of it is just some real big frustration. Probably weren't kind to service people to begin with, and now are extra not kind to service to industry people. And that's happening everywhere. I've talked to restaurants and managers and servers all over the city, and they said that's happening everywhere.
How can someone be a really good customer?
That's a great question. So one way is, well, you know, we're especially in small, more intimate places like we are. And studies have shown that having a regular place for you to go to as a customer is benefits your health. And so it is really good to have a place that you love and to go and enjoy that place often. And it helps your happiness. And there's studies that have shown that. And so that's kind of cool. And then, you know, obviously this is New Orleans, so all we want to do is talk. Yeah. And so we're very happy to, like, we're very nosy. We're always, you know, happy. We're like, we can't wait for you to be our new best friend, you know. So, but it's really fun for us. We really like that part. So I think that this is important, is if you see another customer being disrespectful to a service industry person, please step up. Please say something, because a lot of time that service person may get fired for their reaction in some situations, or they may be scared and they may not know how to deal or how to de-escalate, or they may feel paralyzed in that situation. And I always tell my staff, look around. If someone is screaming at you, look around to see who is around. You know, there's someone in the space near us that is on your side and can help you if that becomes an issue. But I think that it's really important for if you're in a spot that you love and you go to and you see someone being disrespectful to that person or giving them a hard time, just step up and say, hey, what you doing, man? Like, or whatever. Anything will any interruption will de-escalate that situation. Because the reality is that no one wants conflict, no one. Even the person creating conflict doesn't want that conflict to happen. They're creating conflict to end as much conflict as possible. And so I think that's, you know, and that's kind of what I've talked about. Like when I have been in more dangerous industry situations, when I worked overnight for years in DC, you know, we had to de-escalate very drunk people as quickly as possible, or people who were much larger than me, mm-hmm. men who were much larger than me, who were angry over very small things. And I had to de-escalate that, you know? And so it always helps to just have someone say something or interrupt, even saying, hey, can I get a glass of water? Will sometimes just stop that situation from happening.
Oh wow, that's a good tip.
Yeah, so that's really important.
And that's also a good idea for someone that might be supportive of the staff, but also not know.
Yeah, what to do.
What to do to know, hey, can I get a glass of water? Something that's not about the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
That
it will oftentimes de-escalate really fast because that person more than likely feels embarrassed and isn't trying to escalate, but can't stop themselves.
So, okay, good thing is don't scream at
the staff.
Industry worker.
Got it. Yes. Yeah. Number good tip. Hot take.
Hot take. Don't scream at the staff. Yes. Anything else that we can do to be more supportive or?
I think one thing that people probably don't know is, summertime is very scary time for restaurants in particular, July, August, and September into October a lot of times.
Wow. That's a whole quarter. It's a third of a year.
It's very, yeah. It's longer, out of season is longer in other places. New Orleans actually has one of the longest seasons in the country. So we do pretty good, but those few months are very scary. And so if you are traveling, because a lot of people are traveling or it's just too hot, you know, go visit the places that you like. Even if you're not spending as much as you were, as you will be in December or January, right, or something
all,
that.
It's yeah. slow for all of us.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's slow for everyone. Yeah. And we do have a big musician artist community that supports us. And so they have been struggling, you know, all year too. And so that has really hurt us as well, as we've lost a huge piece of our customer base because of that. But, you know, just go in and buy one extra thing or whatever, or, you know, that really goes a long way. And though we pay very well, we definitely pay higher than most places similar to us, a lot higher than most places similar to us. And that obviously impacts our costs and our business as well. But a lot of places, the law is that servers only have to make $2.13 an hour.
On payroll.
Yeah. And so the tipping is an extraordinarily huge piece of how to support your servers. And a lot of times they are people who are doing other things in the city that you're also, you love.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're a culture. A lot of times they are the culture bearers that you see in the clubs or in the streets later on. Mm-hmm. So that support is really important.
And how are, besides your focused research group on your email chain, how else are other businesses kind of coming in for each other? I know you brought in a lot of new products and yeah. things like that. Was there anything you found very comforting or even exciting about how different small businesses could come together?
I mean, I think, and I Natasha and Bernie and I talked about this on our first episode in the season, that Louisiana, you know, it's very hard to make a living in Louisiana, not just New Orleans, everywhere. And we have to be, it's why everyone has, you know, a gig or has something else, have some kind of side gig going on or something that they do besides the job. Mm-hmm. And that is true for business owners as well. You know, like we are always trying to figure out what to do. And across the country as well, because actually the big 60% of our economy in the United States is small businesses with fewer than 10 employees.
Wow.
I mean, that's the majority of our economy. Yeah. And so we need to support small businesses like that because they're really the engines of how we have a comfortable place to live and survive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and here we're always looking for something new and different. And like, you have to be like that here. Like there's no choice. And especially like we're flooded out. We lose hours every month. You know, we lose hours and customers all the time because it's raining and flooding everything. And so that is something we have to constantly overcome. And that's increasingly true for businesses all over the city. And so I think it's just really inspiring for me personally to know the hardships that we, just because of infrastructure in the city, the hardships we have to kind of overcome to have survived 9 years of business and a pandemic, the worst like public health crisis in 100 years, is that we, and then watching all these other people who have started businesses in the pandemic, you know, like who lost their jobs, but kept doing the things that they love and have survived and thrived in new ways.
A lot of musicians, I know musicians who have become roofers. They've
really
become realtors,
yeah.
Not because they want to be a roofer forever,
yeah.
And not because they want to be a realtor forever, not because they want to sew hospital gowns forever,
yeah.
But they are, a lot of the musicians are creative, and that it's like they're creative full stop.
Yeah, exactly.
So that means they can adapt to
Good problem solvers.
They
yeah.
can learn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They're quick on their feet.
Yeah.
So there was I saw a lot of fellow musicians doing everything they could to be creative mm-hmm. and learn new skills, because it got to the point where all we needed was what is necessary.
Yeah.
And things like needing a roof over our heads mm-hmm. and needing hospital gowns and needing masks, those were all things that were absolutely necessary. And mm-hmm. so I saw a lot of musicians who, you know, they're playing for tips on Facebook,
yeah.
but
yeah.
their bread and butter was really coming from having to adapt as well as they could and being creative and always having to be on and being able to absorb information quickly and digest it and react
yeah.
to it. That also, I mean, I saw that happening in my community as well.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people have gone back to school. Like, we have some
yes.
musicians that have gone back
I
to school.
I know someone else going back to school.
Myself and I, oh God, I don't know what I'm doing.
What was the tipping point? What was the moment where you were like, I really wish I knew more about this?
I mean, it was a few years ago.
Are you studying?
I'm studying dietetics. So to be it's going to be a registered dietitian. So I'll have to like get this degree and then pass a test and do an internship, and then I can be a registered dietitian. And so it'll be a new business that I kind of incorporate into Church Alley a little bit. I can't see it all. I can't mm-hmm. see the whole thing, but I have a few ideas of like doing a private practice, having menu items and menus that tackle common ailments for New Orleans, like diabetes, being more sensitive, and having menu items that are better for people with diabetes or chronic inflammation. I have chronic pain and injuries, and changing my diet has made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very interested, like, what else can help my pain? What else can help, you know, the injuries that I do have now? And so that was, I was chronically fatigued. Like, yes, I literally do manual labor all day long and have for years. And so it is tiring, but also I was just like brain fog and fatigued all the time. And I went to my dietitian, who's a friend of mine, and we found out that there was like thyroid issues that I had no idea. And you can help your thyroid issues and chronic fatigue issues and chronic pain issues, which is often all kind of combined with diet, with simple changes in your diet. And so that was, I was like, oh, well, I literally serve food for a living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I can do something a little bit different. And so I started taking classes at Delgado 3 years ago. And I love science classes. I had no idea. I was like, I'm just going to take this class and see what happens. I was like, this was awesome. And then I took another class and another class. And so now I tried to do it part-time, but there was just no way I can get this degree only part-time. So I had to go back to school. And I had a goal I just found this envelope in my desk. So every year I write like my big goals for the year, and I put it in an envelope in my desk at the shop. And I have not wanted to open it this year because it was for 2020. No, it was for 2021, but it was like,
you wrote it.
I wrote it at the beginning of 2020. And I was just like, no, I cannot. I can't have this kind of heartbreak. And I opened it and I literally have done most of the things anyway. And so it was like a good room. And one of them was going hire a general manager, which we did. Amanda started 2 weeks ago, which is awesome. So now I can go back to school. And that was the second goal that I had, is to go back to school full time. And so it just also made me think, it's like, it doesn't always matter the chaos that's happening around you. Like if you're, you know, if your purpose is clear, you're still going to do it. You know, if that's the path for you, it's still going to happen. And so it was just, I was like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. I was like, okay. So now I'll keep that one. I'll keep that letter, yeah, that list of goals.
I have noticed that a little bit myself too in art.
Mm-hmm.
I've, in my art practice, I had done a weekly Zoom meeting,
yeah,
where I gave an art lecture, and then I came up with a craft for everybody to do that was inspired by the artist we studied. And yeah, it had to be stuff that people had at home.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want anybody to have to buy art supplies,
yeah,
because everybody's money was tight,
yeah,
and we were all stuck at home.
Yeah.
So we were using the wrapping that you get from food packaging,
yeah,
and foil and all these things. And eventually this whole, through learning through all of these other artists,
yeah,
that I was writing a lecture for every, yeah, week, my art practice developed.
Yeah.
That's unbeknownst to me.
You didn't even notice it happening.
And then I had written down goals that were like, I want to be able to sell this many pieces. I want to have another solo art show, because 2 years ago I had a solo art show.
Yeah.
And then I have a solo art show next month.
Yeah.
And it's the art that I had developed as I was going through these like weekly art lectures that I was giving on Zoom. And one of the people who learned about the art lectures was someone at the Hammond,
oh, wow,
Art Center. And they ordered one of my little craft kits.
Oh my God.
Then that kind of snowballed into this show that I have there now. And it all happened because I had wanted to do all of those little things. I had wanted to do the show. I had wanted to do the show as in, I had wanted to do this art club. I had wanted to, even though all my jobs were lost,
yeah,
like everything came to a halt, like March 15th, 2020, yeah, school kind of,
yeah, you're in school,
imploded a little bit. My internship ended, my, you know, staff,
businesses, your business went under, basically, mm-hmm, stopped producing at all.
Yeah. So I lost all of the work I had, all the gigs I had. And then, I had written down, because I had had the year before, I had a solo art show. And mm-hmm, I was like, well, in a year, I want a solo art show. I came up with that goal, mm-hmm, back, way back in the before times.
Yeah.
And then not magically, I mean, I did put in the work of,
yeah,
you know, like you said, just like the regular showing up to,
oh, no,
the commitments that you have or the commitments you made to yourself. And mm-hmm, you can look back and be like, oh, wow, I'm doing it.
Yeah, right.
As long as
it's happening, it's, yeah, happening.
As long as you have set the course at some point.
At some point, yeah, it's true. It's so interesting. I think that obviously COVID took a lot from everyone, from every single person, more from some people, from a lot of people. And, you know, specifically here, I mean, obviously we only understand New Orleans, but, mm-hmm, or Louisiana, but people just made the best that they could out of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something early on in the pandemic. I was interviewed by Whetstone Magazine, Stephen, and he was doing short clips. And I was like, you know, New Orleans is uniquely qualified to weather this storm, you know, because we are so resilient and we're constantly navigating impossible situations that are no fault of just the weather, you know,
yes,
how many hurricanes we got hit by last year, you know, and so, or the rain on a Wednesday morning that floods your entire business.
Yes.
You know, we're uniquely qualified. The whole culture here is to survive whatever it is thrown at you. And so it's been a really interesting experience to do that, to like prioritize myself, you know, and what I want to see and what I want to be doing every day and what I'm ready for, challenges that I think that I'm now ready for, and just watch that happen all around the city, you know, for so many people. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yes, people have to get very creative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you had to deal with any of those kind of infrastructure issues as also being a homeowner and a landlord?
No, we're very lucky. Well, I mean, I personally, my side of the house, has the roof has fallen in two places.
That's not how that was supposed to go.
So that's very fun.
That's not what roofs are supposed to do.
It the ceiling, not the roof, the ceiling, the ceiling.
Well, also ceilings aren't supposed to do that either. So
it's been an exciting year in the house, in the Blanchard household. So I've had to renovate pretty much the whole house at different times. Really? Like a piece
year? Of
this year, no, in the last year. I'm just finishing.
Well, y'all have to be at home anyway.
So
we're all here.
My dogs and I have lived in little corners of the house throughout the year as we just move furniture back and forth. I mean, it's a 200-year-old house. Like,
that's amazing.
It's just like, yeah, it's well built, but the new stuff that's been put in is what the problem is, it seems like. Well, water is the problem. If it only didn't rain.
Right. It's not the heat that'll get you. It's the humidity.
It's the humidity and the rain. And like literally, we've had to gut pretty much the whole house at different parts of it in this whole year. And we just like wait a couple days because it's gonna storm and we can see where all the water is coming through. And so that was helpful.
Good thing it rains every day.
I know. So that is,
I'll show you where the leaks are.
Yeah. That has been extremely stressful. Like extremely.
I can imagine.
Luckily it's not on my tenant side. My tenant side is fine. So she's been totally fine. So I'm glad I've been like obsessive over looking at her side just to make sure that all of her side's fine. So
that's good.
Yeah.
And at least it's only half of a problem.
It's only half of the problem. I know. And so, so that's good. And we don't flood here really.
Okay.
We don't flood that high.
I feel like that's what "we don't flood here" actually means. It's like,
it doesn't get into your car.
Right.
Like
that's what people mean when they say it doesn't flood. That there's no standing water.
Yeah, no, no.
They
no.
mean that it doesn't touch the floorboard.
Yeah,
the
it doesn't
car.
Get inside your car. So that's really great. And then I did, like everyone last spring and summer, I planted a garden in the backyard. And mm-hmm. so I used, like, because it floods in the backyard. And so I just made these like water loving plant. Like
that's
I put
cool.
all, yeah. So now I have, like, since it's flooding every day, it's just like they're very happy. So that's good. All my cactus are not happy.
What type of plants did you choose?
this is all that I want for my backyard. I want to sit in my hammock, be mm-hmm. surrounded by plants and butterflies and birds and like have the dogs. And we have a lot of cardinals that come through the backyard. And so it's all about that. That is my vision. So, I just got like a Saint Francis statue of Assisi. So it's mm-hmm. like all the patron saint of animals. Mm-hmm. And I put that in the backyard and a little bird bath I just found too. And so it's just about animals. My yard is also the cat highway. So there's tons of cats that run.
Cat traffic.
Yeah, cat traffic. It's always lots of cat traffic.
So they're always all the birds.
Yeah, because of birds. So they're always running back and forth. And we have a ton of wasps right now. So those are also, which are pollinators.
Pollinators.
Yeah. So the maypop is I think it's the maypop that we planted in the back. And so that is my fault. The wasps are very much enjoying my backyard as well.
Well, you know, that's nature.
Yeah, it's fine. And actually, they're actually really nice. Like, they're, because we get into their...
Very chatty.
They're very chatty. They'll, like, fly around Beau and be like, no. And, like, when we go in the backyard, nice. They just move over. Like, they are, you know, we're all
they're
in it together.
Like, thank you for the shrubbery.
Yes, exactly. Beau keeps trying to get up close to them. So I'm like, maybe just... Maybe not do
not that.
Not
that close.
Yeah.
Is there a special connection that you have with that patron saint, or is it more decorative? Do you have a belief system or a hodgepodge?
I have a little hodgepodge. I love animals, and I've always loved animals since I was very young. Like, I will watch and hang out with lizards. Like, I always stop when there's a worm on the ground to move it over to the grass so that they're okay. I'm very, like, I love animals, and I've always have. And so that saint in particular, and I grew up Catholic for, you know, as much or not as much as I participate in Catholicism. There's still things.
Many Catholics.
Yeah, there's still things that, yeah, exactly, that I appreciate. And mm-hmm. some of the saints are one of them. And then when my mom passed, we had her prayer cards be the patron saint of Francis as well. So all of her prayer cards that we have are that. And she actually had his prayer on her wall too. So in her house. So I guess there's a little bit. And then Georgia passed away recently, which is my dog, who you could hear in all of the episodes before this. And so I kind of wanted to put that out for her as well, because she always spent time in the backyard too. Now the cats are happier, but and the possum. We also have possums. The possums and the
possums
cats.
Possums are the only North American marsupial.
Yes. We have dealt with Georgia really liked them in a dangerous way, and so we've dealt with them, but now they are much happier just to be in the backyard to run through at night anyway. Scurry by.
Well, what a sweet way to honor her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really like it's really pretty. So,
and then you'll always have a sanctuary with her too.
Yeah. So I just have it out there. I haven't designed it yet, but I'm going to have more designed for the bird bath and the statue. Cute. So
your own little garden of Versailles.
Yes. Yes. The tiniest garden of Versailles there is. I'm very humble, so that's why.
That's why I'm just saying it's the smallest.
A little bit.
Still a Versailles, but the smallest.
The smallest.
How about this? Let's not put it in any order of first, second, third. Three places you love to go eat in New Orleans.
Oh, okay. I really love Seafood Sally's right now. I'm obsessed with it.
I've never been.
It's so good. It's just like a seafood place, like that I would find in Lafayette. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That it's just. The oysters are so good. The cocktails are good. Crabs are delicious. The crawfish was so good. And I know. We're going to Seafood Sally's after this, evidently. I'm also going on Tuesday. I literally book a date there like every single week. You can find me at Seafood Sally's. Yeah, the crabs are, I'm a Lafayette Joy Beer girl. I do not like New Orleans crawfish.
Edit it out.
Or New Orleans gumbo. I do not eat that stuff here. But
don't tell the tourists.
Yeah. But Seafood Sally's crawfish were so good. So
good.
I was happy that I had it there. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Ella.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I think, are we going to Seafood Sally's now?
Let's go.
Okay.
Let's go.
Full send.
Full send.
Look at me learning new things.
Yeah. I got it. Listen, I love my Gen Z supervisor. She's a hoot and a half.
All right. See you later. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.